Hey, friends, and welcome to episode 216 of It's About Time, a podcast sharing stories and strategies to inspire better work, life, and balance. I'm your host, Anna Dearman Cornick, time management coach and author of Time Management Essentials. In last week's episode, we dove into the five reasons why we often find ourselves overcommitted. If you tuned into that episode, then you know that being overcommitted, overwhelmed, and pushed past your capacity isn't a result of bad time management. Instead, it's a bit deeper than that. And if you haven't listened to that episode yet, press pause on this one and go back and check out episode 215. You'll want to have an idea of what your root cause for overcommitment is before you dive into this one. All right, if you're still listening, then to give a super quick recap, those five root causes for becoming overcommitted are, first, equating being needed with being worthy. Second, the fear of missing out on opportunities. Third, the fear of damaging relationships. Fourth, being flat out disorganized. And fifth, the fear of missing out on money. And here's the thing. In thinking about those five root causes, you might recognize a few of them as being the culprit for your overwhelm. And that's okay. That's perfectly normal. What's most important is that you've taken the time to think about what's gotten you to this point and what's getting in the way of healthy boundaries and intentional time management. So in this episode, we're shifting our focus from the root cause of overcommitment to the impact of overcommitting ourselves. Overcommitment isn't just about trying to navigate a hectic schedule or get to the bottom of a never-ending to-do list. When it comes down to it, overcommitment sneaks its way into lots of different parts of our lives, our health, our relationships. It impacts our work quality and even our sense of self. And understanding these consequences of overcommitment is huge because we don't just want to make it to the other side of a busy period. We want to recognize and shut down a cycle that can significantly affect our overall well-being. So in this episode, we're talking about the hidden impacts of being overcommitted. We'll cover how to stop the cycle of being chronically overloaded. I'll present some short-term solutions to help you survive a season of being overcommitted. And then I'll share some long-term options to prevent you from falling back into that overcommitment trap. And because I know you're probably making the most of your time, and maybe you're listening in the car while you're running errands or you're out on a walk right now, I know it might be a little inconvenient for you to drop what you're doing and take notes. So don't worry, I've got you covered. I've taken notes so you don't have to. You can find all the details from this episode over in the show notes, plus links to any of the resources I'll mention. Today's show notes can be found over at abouttimepodcast.com/216. So, whether you're currently feeling the weight of too many commitments or you're looking to avoid it in the future, this episode is for you. All right, it's about time we get started, so let's get this show on the road.
You're listening to It's About Time, a podcast about work, life, and balance. Around here, we believe that busy is not a badge of honor. Your host, Anna Dearman Cornick, is here to share tips and strategies to help you make the most of your time. Listen in on real conversations and success stories to find out how other go-getters are getting things done. If you're ready to step away from the overwhelm and spend your time on what matters most, then you're in the right place. Here's your host, time management coach, Anna Dearman Cornick.
Let's start by diving into the consequences of overcommitment and why it's so crucial to address them head on. You see, overcommitment isn't just about having a hectic schedule. It goes much deeper, impacting our lives in profound ways. So let's start with the most immediate casualty, our physical and mental health. When we're constantly overcommitted, stress becomes a constant companion, like a gloomy little rain cloud following us around. And this can lead to serious health issues like insomnia, anxiety, burnout. It's like running a car engine at full throttle all the time. Eventually, it's going to overheat and you're going to end up on the side of the road. But the impact of overcommitment doesn't stop there. Our relationships, both personal and professional, can suffer as well. When we're stretched too thin, we may not be as present or available for our family or friends as we'd like to be. At work, the quality of our performance can start to decline. We're there, but we're not really there, if you know what I mean. And speaking of quality, that brings us to another consequence: the deterioration of our work and our overall life satisfaction. It's hard to do anything well when you're doing too much. Things that once brought you joy can start to feel heavy, like burdens. And what's worse, in the hustle of meeting deadlines and ticking things off of our to-do list, a lot of times we can lose sight of what we're working for in the first place. We're just trying to get through it, get through another day, get through another project, get through another week. And finally, let's talk about the loss of personal time and neglecting your self-care. How many hobbies have you set aside? And if you're thinking, what hobbies? Then I'm talking to you. How many workouts have we skipped? How many things have we missed in the name of getting things done? Overcommitment means that every minute of your time is already spoken for, leaving little to no room for the activities that actually nourish you, that feed your soul, that fill your cup. And so inevitably, you're running on empty. These consequences paint a pretty clear picture. Overcommitment, especially chronic overcommitment, is a path that can lead us away from the very goals and the values that we're trying to uphold. So now that we've explored the consequences of overcommitment, let's talk about the strategies that we often turn to whenever we're feeling overloaded. When the pressure mounts, our go-to responses are usually about efficiency and prioritization. We try to work faster, and we prioritize relentlessly and ruthlessly, often writing and rewriting our to-do lists to put out the next fire. So let's take a look at each one of these. First, let's look at simply working faster. Working more efficiently is just a fancy way of saying that you're trying to cram more tasks into already packed days. To work more efficiently, you can use strategies like staying focused with the Pomodoro method, using a shiny things list. You can cut back on perfectionism, or you can use technology to automate some of your processes to speed things up. When you're overcommitted, it just doesn't make sense to leisurely and manually make your way through the things on your plate. But here's the thing. Even efficiency has its limits. The second strategy we go for whenever we're overcommitted is prioritization. Ruthless prioritization and urgency management, which is a fancy way of saying we put out the biggest fires or we fix the squeakiest wheel. This strategy involves looking at our mountain of tasks and deciding which ones are truly urgent and truly important. And this approach, don't get me wrong, it can be a total lifesaver, helping us to focus on what really matters in the heat of the moment. What do we have to do first? What do we have to do right now? Which deadline is up next? What are our colleagues or clients asking us for next or right now? We're constantly trying to stay one step ahead of the rushing floodwaters of commitments. And let's be real, this strategy, just like working quickly, is pretty necessary when you're overcommitted. It's the juggling act, the plate spinning, the treading water to continue getting things done when you've got to do more than you can handle. But here's the thing, both working faster and prioritizing are like Band-Aids. They're great for some short-term relief, but they don't address the underlying issue of overcommitment. At some point, you hit a threshold. Your efficiency maxes out and you can't physically work any faster. And prioritization alone can't save you from the overwhelming feeling of just having too much on your plate. When the first two strategies start to max out, it's time to consider the next two short-term strategies for overcommitment relief: communication and cutting your losses. First up, let's talk about clear communication. If you're working as fast as you possibly can and prioritizing as effectively as possible, and it becomes clear that you are not going to hit your agreed upon goals or follow through as you'd hoped or as you'd promised, it's time to renegotiate deadlines and be honest about what you can realistically handle. Open communication can help in managing expectations, both yours and others. Remember, it is better to set realistic expectations than to overpromise and underdeliver. And then finally, you've got to know when to cut your losses and walk away. What can you pause or completely walk away from? Oh yeah, quit. I mean quit. And it might sound drastic, but sometimes the best thing you can do is step back or completely let go of a commitment. And this is not a sign of failure. It's a sign of wisdom. It's about recognizing your limits and respecting them. I realize that quitting or pausing a commitment is a huge step that requires a lot of thought and careful consideration. You've got to weigh the potential risks and damage to the relationships, the opportunities, and the financial commitments you've made. But at the end of the day, the most important asset that you can protect is yourself, your health, your physical health, your mental health, your well-being. Sometimes walking away from a commitment in this season is the best thing that you can do for your future self, even if it doesn't feel that way in the moment. I hate to think in combative fighting terms, but it's kind of like strategically losing a battle to win a war. You're surrendering, you're letting go, but you're winning long term because you're preserving yourself along the way. Famous football coach Vince Lombardi once said, "Winners never quit and quitters never win." And honestly, I think that's ridiculous and even harmful. Let me tell you a story. A few years ago, I was completely overcommitted. I was trying to build my business. I had a newborn. I was freelancing social media content creation and public relations for a few clients. And I was the volunteer chairman of a nonprofit women's leadership conference. I'll cut to the chase and let you know that after months of struggling to make headway with planning and executing the first ever women's leadership conference for this organization, I decided to walk away. I quit. I handed over the reins to the chair-elect, and I wished them the best. As a result, I was almost instantly a happier person. The amount of drama in my life decreased by nearly 75%. I'm making up that stat, but let's just say it was by a lot. I got so much of my time back. I didn't even realize how much it was impacting, just totally draining my physical and mental health. And within a few short weeks of quitting this obligation, within a few weeks of walking away, I realized I had the room. I had the time capacity, the emotional, the mental capacity to take on something else much more meaningful. And within a few weeks, I published the very first episode of It's About Time. You want to tell me that quitters never win? I say that if you've never quit something, you haven't lived. If you're holding on to something that weighs you down, that impacts how you feel because you don't want to be seen as a quitter, I'll tell you that you have no idea what amazing things could be on the other side of quitting. And you won't find out until you take that step. So consider this your permission from a quitter to quit something that isn't serving you. Okay, y'all, so I know we could all probably use a little more time in our day, right? You're no stranger to busy schedules and intentionally filling them up to the brim because you just have so much to get done. But sometimes it feels like you don't really ever have the time to just slow down and enjoy the simple things. Simple things like when my toddlers are giggling and playing nicely together in the backyard, or when a Sunday afternoon nap sounds too good to pass up. We all want more time to enjoy these kinds of things, right? Well, if you love personality quizzes like I do, then you're in for a treat. In my new quiz, which you can take for free at annadcornick.com/quiz, I'm helping you uncover what it will take to get you from chaos to calm, to finally feel like you have space in your days. I know it can feel downright frustrating to keep using the same old time management strategies that just don't seem to work for you. You've got the planners, the calendars, the apps, you're doing all the things, but you still feel like you have no time. And that's because you need time management strategies that work for your personality and your life. In my 10 plus years working in crisis communications and chaos management, in all the time I've spent with my clients, I've learned that everyone has their own needs. And knowing what those needs are can really help you discover the best approach to planning your days. Knowing yourself can help you ease up busy schedules and find more calm and clarity in your week. Do you want to know how to get there? To have more breathing room in your days? Let's figure out your time management personality type so you can uncover exactly what you need to do to feel more productive, less stressed, and more balanced. You can take the quiz at annadcornick.com/quiz, and I'll make sure to link to the quiz in our show notes. All right, on with the show. All right, so these short-term strategies are exactly that. They're short-term. Working faster, prioritizing, renegotiating deadlines through clear communication, and quitting, they can bring an immediate sense of relief in a season of overcommitment. But they're just the first step. As I said earlier, there's a threshold to how much we can speed up and how many things we can juggle before we start dropping balls. That's why it's crucial to look at long-term solutions that address the root of the problem and lead to lasting change. The first long-term anti-overcommitment strategy that I recommend to my clients who find themselves stuck on a hamster wheel of overcommitment, especially when that overcommitment comes in the form of taking on too many side gigs, jobs, clients, or financial-based opportunities, it's calculating their enough number. So this move is all about financial clarity, knowing how much you need to make to live comfortably and meet your obligations. To calculate your enough number, take an inventory of your current monthly expenses. You might need to print out some bank statements and do some categorization, or a program like YNAB, that stands for You Need a Budget, or Every Dollar, can make this process easier. I've used YNAB in the past, but I've been using Every Dollar for the past 2 years. I'll be sure to link both in the show notes so you can check them out. Then, once you've identified your consistent monthly expenses, how much do you want to put toward savings goals, retirement, kids' college funds, investments? This is going to look different for all of us, and it also requires taking the step of actually setting some financial goals. And this is why this is a longer-term strategy. It takes a bit more time, and I'll be honest, it's hard to carve out time to do this when you're already overcommitted. But when you know your enough number, you have a very clear-cut threshold for stopping. The thing is, we can always have more. In fact, that's largely what our society wants us to want. More stuff, a bigger house, a nicer car, another boat, a second home, a more luxurious vacation, more, more, more. And don't get me wrong, I love stuff too. And setting goals to have a bigger house or a nicer car, those aren't bad goals to have. But it's when we let the pursuit of more take over our lives to the point that we can't enjoy living that more becomes dangerous. When you have your enough number in mind, you have a line. And once you cross that line, you can stop taking on more freelance gigs or more clients or more overtime. You can just stop and actually enjoy the fruits of your labor. And on top of knowing when to stop, once you have this number in mind, it becomes easier to assess which commitments are essential and which ones you can let go of. Maybe knowing your enough number will be the exact thing that enables you to step down from that role, to walk away from that stressful side gig, or to fire that pain in the ass client because you don't need them. Your enough number is everything for preserving your boundaries and stopping the endless pursuit of more for the sake of more. Next, let's talk about setting personal and professional goals. Having clear, defined goals acts like a compass, guiding your decisions about what to take on and what to pass on. When you align your commitments with your long-term goals, you'll find it easier to say no to things that don't serve your bigger picture. Saying no and managing FOMO, the fear of missing out, is a critical skill in preventing overcommitment. And it requires a mindset shift and recognizing that not every opportunity is worth pursuing, and that saying no can actually open doors to more meaningful and aligned opportunities. Every year, I lead a goal-setting workshop called Ready, Set, Goals. On day two of this workshop, we take our vision for the upcoming year and set SMART goals, goals that are specific, measurable, attainable, or adventurous, relevant, and time-bound. That R in SMART for relevant is key. It just doesn't make sense to take on more projects and add more stuff to your life if it's not truly relevant to your long-term vision or your goals. Look, I know it's hard to say no to opportunities that come your way, but if an opportunity doesn't align with your vision or your goals, then it's not a good opportunity. And if you say yes to something that isn't a good fit for your vision or your goals, that yes is taking up space that could be used for something truly amazing. Finally, effective delegation and outsourcing are game changers in managing and eventually preventing overcommitment. But effective delegation doesn't happen overnight. And the key word here is effective delegation. Because you can definitely delegate something that then blows up into an even bigger problem because you didn't take the appropriate steps to set yourself and the person you're delegating to up for success. To effectively delegate, you have to start by identifying tasks that can be handled by others, okay? And I'm sure that that sounds like a no-brainer, but the thing is that delegation isn't just about offloading work, it's about making space for the work that only you can do. So I encourage you to ask yourself, what can only you do? And if you really sit down and challenge yourself to make this list is going to be much shorter than you think. And look, I get that delegating feels hard. And that's because to do it thoughtfully, you have to take your time. I feel like there are two common ways to delegate. Okay, here's option one. Here's common way number one. First, ask someone to do something. Give them no directions and just expect them to automatically know how to do it. This is the method that most people use when they delegate, and then they get frustrated when the thing that they wanted done wasn't done in the exact way that they wanted, even though they didn't articulate what they wanted in the first place. Delegating something with no clear instructions is exactly what makes people hate delegating or think they're bad at it or think they're the only person who can do what they do. Newsflash, my friend, if you delegated without providing crystal clear instructions and things don't go exactly the way that you hoped, that's on you. That's not on the other person. So here's option two. Identify the task that you want to delegate. Capture the steps involved in completing the task. Screen record a Loom video of yourself doing the task if it's a computer thing. Write down the steps on a piece of paper or in a Word doc if that makes more sense. Think about what questions someone might ask if they were doing this task for the first time. Make sure the answers to those questions are incorporated into the video or the doc that you created. Then delegate the task and share the instructions that you captured on how to do that task. And make sure the person that you're delegating to is clear on what done or success looks like. That is what truly effective delegation looks like. It's not just throwing someone a task and expecting them to read your mind. And if you're thinking, that sounds like a lot of work, I might as well just do it myself. But then you're stuck. You're stuck doing that task forever. You're stuck doing something low impact that someone else could be doing, which is taking you away from spending time doing things that only you can do. And here's the thing. You may not be able to delegate every single task that's on your plate immediately. That's why this is a long-term strategy. It's not a silver bullet that's going to fix your overcommitment overwhelm in 15 minutes or less. But if you can take an inventory of how you're spending your time, identify opportunities to delegate tasks that aren't in the only you can do them category, and then prioritize the impact of getting those tasks off your plate, you're spending time today that helps you have more time in the future. You hear me? Delegation is work up front so you can have your life back later, which is so much better than just continuing on the same hamster wheel of overcommitment and overwhelm indefinitely. It comes down to this. Implementing these long-term strategies requires a shift in how we view our time, our work, and our lives. It takes moving from a reactive state where we're constantly in catch-up mode to a proactive stance where we're making deliberate, intentional choices about how we spend our time and energy. And as you make these changes little by little, you'll find yourself moving towards a life that's not only more manageable, but it's also more fulfilling and aligned with your true values. I mean, that sounds amazing, right? That's living the dream. So there you have it. We started this episode by looking at the consequences of overcommitment, how it affects not just our work, but our health, our relationships, and overall quality of life. It's clear that while overcommitment might offer short-term gains, the long-term effects can be detrimental. Then we explored some immediate strategies like working faster and prioritizing tasks. And while these can be helpful in a pinch, they have a limit. They have a threshold and they won't work forever. But the heart of today's episode was our look at long-term solutions, understanding your enough number, aligning commitments with your personal and professional goals, mastering the art of saying no, and embracing effective delegation. These are the pillars. That's the foundation that will support a sustainable, balanced approach to your commitments. Implementing these changes isn't just about reducing your workload. It's about transforming your approach to work and life. Yeah, it's a journey from being reactive to becoming proactive, from feeling overwhelmed to being empowered. And no, this transformation won't happen overnight. Most things that are worthwhile take time. And every step you take is a step towards a more balanced, fulfilling life. So if you're feeling overcommitted and overwhelmed, I encourage you to start small. Pick one or two of the strategies we discussed today and begin to integrate them into your life. Remember, my friend, change is a process. And as cheesy as it sounds, it's true. Every journey, every step toward transformation begins with a single step. As always, all of the details from today's episode can be found over in the show notes at abouttimepodcast.com/216. I want to know, was this episode helpful for you? Is diving into the consequences, the causes, and the strategies to work your way out of chronic overcommitment, was this helpful? Do you see yourself implementing some of these strategies in your life, or at least sharing this episode with someone who you know could benefit from getting out of the hamster wheel of overcommitment? If you got something out of this episode, or if you shared this with a friend, head over to Instagram and send me a DM. Let me know. I want to know if this type of episode is helpful for you. I'm going to link my Instagram over in the show notes, but my handle is Anna D. Cornick. So come find me over there. Let me know what you thought. All right, that's it for today. Thanks so much for tuning in, and I'll talk to you soon.
Thanks for listening to It's About Time, a podcast about work, life, and balance. Head over to www.abouttimepodcast.com to join the conversation. Check out the show notes and dive into bonus content so you can start living your best life today. Love this episode? Be sure to share it with a friend, subscribe, and leave a review. Thanks for tuning in, and we'll see you in the next episode.